listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Happy day, everybody. Happy day. It's your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle. Welcome to my couch. We're on the couch officially as of right now. So what I want you to do is kick your feet up on it, relax, take your shoes off, and join me for almost an hour of great shrink stuff. And as usual, I always give out the phone number here so you can call me if you have any issues or problems you want to talk about. Whatever they may be, you can do so. Let me give you that number right now so you can be thinking. I've gotten several emails to share with you today from listeners, and we're going to try to help them out a little bit. So whatever your problems may be, call me, and we'll try to get to them as well. Whatever. Relationships. I've got an email from a guy who has some serious anger issues, so I'm going to talk to him about that. Also, if you have, we'll get to another segment a little bit later, too, called The Worst Dates Ever. Yes, dates from hell. Also, I'm going to be answering another email about somebody who has low self-esteem, really feels bad about who they are and what they're all about and stuff. We can work on that a little bit. And, of course, we have a lot of relationship problems, as always. Isn't that what it's all about? It's relationships. How we feel about ourselves and the stuff we have, we put onto others, and then they go away and don't want to be around us because we have problems. Or the ones that do want to hang out with us want to try to fix us, and they're codependent. Or whatever, you know? That's the way it is. The number to call me at, right here at LA Talk Radio, is 323-203-0815. Once again, that's 323, that's the area code, Los Angeles, 203-0815. And by the way, I'm Dr. Michelle, like I said, your friendly psychologist, and you can find out more about me on my website. It's Dr. Michelle Therapy. You just abbreviate that there, like Dr. Michelle with two L's, therapy.com, drmichelletherapy.com. And on my website, you'll see what I talk about. Positive life changes. Yeah, I'm totally into that. Making positive life changes because you can do it. And I believe no matter how down and out you are and how sucky your life is and the tough things that you're going through, you can pull yourself out of it. You can make little bitty changes. See, a lot of folks think they have to go from black to white. They have to make changes overnight or next week. I want you to. No, you make little bitty changes. That's all about the baby steps thing you hear about in the corny therapies and in the addiction therapies. Also on my website, you'll hear me talk about what I call detoxing from the drama in your life. Yeah, because I liken a lot of really poor relationship skills and anger and the need for drama, continuing drama to addiction. Just like addiction, because those chemicals are popping. When we're angry as hell and we're fighting and we're, oh yeah, those chemicals are there. We get addicted to them. And then we also get addicted to the nicey-nice feeling when we come down from it. Ah, it's like relief. It's kind of like the fight or flight thing, you know? You just want to mellow out afterwards. But you got to keep that anger and those issues going and that drama going in order to get that rush again from those chemicals. But we can make that go away too. And I'm going to address one of those in one of my emails today. Maybe I should start off with that, as a matter of fact, since I'm talking about that. Once more, the phone line here, 323-203-0815. And you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. I'm going to answer a question here from Ashton, who wrote me. Just read it straight and maybe we can give him some help on the air here. Dear Dr. Michelle, you've got to help me. I don't know what to do. My girlfriend is pulling farther and farther away from me. We've been together for about a year, and she moved in with me about 4 months ago. I love her a lot. She tells me lately that she loves me, but, there's the but, she can hardly stand my anger anymore. She said that in the last 3 months, I've gotten worse. She complains that my explosiveness and loudness freaks her out, and that I don't have patience with anything. I admit that I have a lot of stress at work, that I hate being stuck in traffic. I guess he lives in Los Angeles. And I also hate lines, and that I get impatient with stupid people. Nice, Ashton. That tells me something about you. I've always had problems with my parents and older brother. Sometimes I get so frustrated that I get into these yelling matches with them. We never physically fight, although I feel like it, but it has always been this way. I don't usually argue with my girlfriend. She's quiet and sweet, but I guess she's seeing what has always gone on in my family more and more, and I'm embarrassed about it. I do tell her that I'm sorry, but sometimes I can't control being angry. What should I do? Well, you know, apologizing is great and all that, Ashton. It's wonderful. But, you know, the old thing, you got to do the actions. You know, we can say stuff, but after a while, if we keep saying stuff and we don't follow through, then that's BS. And people just start looking at you like, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, whatever. So you got to follow through with the actions, and you got to hear what I'm talking about now. I was just talking about addiction to anger. And it is. It really is. I worked in a clinic for 4 years. It was residential and in an out treatment clinic. So in other words, a lot of folks who had some addiction issues lived there, and then they would come to the other part of the clinic, and what they would do is they would get help in groups. And I led therapy groups with a lot of rageful addicts. And I started to think of anger as if it were a drug. Because a lot of the group started turning into, well, I'm mad at my, and you know, just blaming other people in their life for what happened, and that's why they want to get checked out all the time. Which I get, and that's true. I mean, a whole lot of folks who are addicts, substance abusers, alcoholics, you know, they come from abusive homes because they feel less than, and they've taken it all in, and then they have to numb their feelings, and because they were never allowed to express their feelings, because you got it, right? You got that whole circle thing going on. But I also found that there are actually biochemical changes in our bodies. Okay? When we use rage, profanity, we pound things, we get crazy, it gets high, you know, that level. We tend to have physical things happening. Also, those of us who rage a lot have a lot more health problems than people who kind of practice containing their anger. Now, a lot of people in the olden days used to talk about, you know, getting that anger out. That used to be like a real popular therapy in the 80s. But this guy did some anger research. His name was Dr. Feshbach, and he explored hostility and aggressiveness. He took a group of young boys who weren't especially aggressive or destructive and encouraged them to kick furniture and play with violent toys and just go crazy. You know, let this aggression out. And they did, boy. They were in this little room, and they went crazy. What happened, though, what they found is instead of draining these boys over long periods of supposed anger therapy, of this aggression, it actually increased. The boys got more hostile and more destructive. As opposed to letting off steam, they have the steam theory. Oh, if you let it off, you'll feel better. No. So what they found that expressing hostility towards another person may increase rather than decrease hostile feelings because you're looking at basic chemicals. You're releasing chemicals. And although you're feeling crappy and you're angry and you're putting it, it's a high, baby. And then you come down, you're done with your kicking and your screaming and your yelling and your whatever you're doing. And then you hit. And that's a release. And you feel good and the chemicals change. You're mellow. Wow, I feel so much better. But what it does, though, is the brain gets used to the high energy anger. So we keep repeating it. All right. So what I'm telling you, Ashton, is you sound like you don't have any issues with expressing your anger. A lot of people do. And your girlfriend is clearly telling you she's kind of getting freaked out because, you know, you probably were on pretty good behavior at the beginning of the relationship, right? Yeah, you kind of didn't share a lot of that with you. Apparently she hasn't been to a lot of family functions with you, or everybody else was kind of on good behavior, maybe. But then as you wear on in the relationship, I see you've been together for about a year. You know, a lot of you kind of start letting down and getting more comfortable and kind of letting her know who you really are and where you came from and all that stuff. So what's happening is she's looking at you saying, I don't know if I really want to be in a long-term and or marriage or whatever long-term thing with this guy now, because this is freaking me out. And he's apologizing, but then he's going through it again. So whatever you're doing is not working. And I really can understand, you know, where she's coming from. So I don't know what you've tried. A lot of people with whom I worked at the clinic, they tried willpower, oaths, complete, you know, cold turkey. They did relationship therapy. They did, you know, getting all the anger out once and for all, exploring anger at the parents, which is good, or the whoever made you feel so bad. I don't know if you tried medication. Maybe you need to see your general practitioner or a psychiatrist. And I'm not pushing pills here. Let me get that clear. I don't do that. I'm all for working with the mind and the behaviors so you can feel better. But what I'm seeing is you may be losing this lady. She's just freaking out a little bit and saying, I don't want to do it with this guy. I don't think I want to do it with this guy. So what you've got to do is pull back a little bit and stop freaking her out. And you've got to talk to her like I'm talking to you, kindly. And you have to say, as you see, my family and I have always done this, as you know, and what I'm going to do is I'm really going to try and work on it. So what I would suggest you do is kind of hear what I'm saying, that anger can be an addiction sometimes for you and also your family members who are out there. Wah! Wah! You know, and here's some myths I want you to think about. Aggression is the instinctive catharsis for anger. Aggression. It's instinctive. Yeah, we do get pissed a lot. We do. It is. It's instinctive. Sometimes it is, but it's an acquired habit. We all get angry. It's the fight or flight, flight, fight, fight, build up the defenses. You know? It's kind of a learned reaction. It's practiced by people who think they can get away with behaving this way. It's pretty much learned because either, Ashton, you freaked out a lot of people in your life and they've gone away, which I'm guessing, or you feel that you can just pull this once in a while and then you cool off and have good periods. Okay? And myth number two is taking out your anger on other people gets rid of it or makes you feel less angry. Well, it does, like I said, temporarily. Okay? Myth number three, tantrums and other childhood rages that you may have had are healthy expressions of anger that create neurosis or problems. Yeah. Or forestall. I didn't say create. Wow, that was Freudian. I said create. Or hold back problems. You know, if you have tantrums, you let your kid get it out and have rages and all that, you know, they're going to be healthier because they're going to grow up and they're going to be all like, you know, relaxed then. And they're going to get it out. No. No. And the emotions are as subject to the laws of learning as any other behavior. Just like you read something, you learn how to do a math problem. You can learn how to manage that anger. And a lot of folks, you know, and I know what you might be thinking right now, Ashton. I can't hold it back, so tough. If I hold it back, I'll blow up like a steam thing. Well, the steam thing is a really good theory. If you think about it, the pressure steam stuff, you let out steam a little bit at a time. I'm not talking about explosive steam. I'm talking about thinking about, wow, that really made me angry. But, you know, talking about it out to yourself. That really made me angry that what he said. But I know the truth is that he's got some issues and I'm really defensive because I've been hurt in the past. So I'm not going to give that person the power to get me crazy. So here's the deal. I want you to listen and I'll email you back, Ashton. So let me give you some things to think about and for you to say to yourself. Maybe you can, I'll write you back and I'll put these down for you. These are some things to think about that you need to try to practice every day, just like the substance abusers. So I'm going to write you, I will practice self-restraint as a top priority today. All right? If I'm feeling like my anger is about to erupt, I'm going to split. I'm going to quietly leave the situation. And I'm talking about, you're saying about those lines you stand in. You can't stand lines or stupid people. Give me a break. Come on. You know, everybody's got their own stuff. Everybody will say things. Yeah, we deal with people out in the public that seem stupid and all. But it's not your job to tell them they're stupid or correct them. You just get through your life, get in and out of the line or whatever you're taking care of. If you're dealing with someone directly at work and you think they're stupid, you need to sit down and help them out and tell them where maybe they're going in the wrong direction. Or sit down with your manager if they're really driving you crazy calmly, not freaking out on people. Okay? Also think about this. I want you to find the truth in all criticisms directed toward you today, especially from your girlfriend. Find the truth. Don't defend. Don't go, well, I was just so, no, shut up. All right? Listen to what she says. Hear it and go, whoa, did I really come off like that? Hear it. All right? Also, I will avoid trying to make any family member or partner or friend understand my rage. This really goes hand in hand with what I was just talking about to you. I will let them understand my rage. Don't try to talk yourself. Well, you know, the reason why I did it, that's bullcrap. Don't do that. There's no reason. Yeah, we all blow up. We all get crazy. But constantly, continually, don't be making excuses. It's a turnoff, dude. All right? I'll humbly commit myself to removing my angry behaviors today. Today only, as my contribution toward a more peaceful life around me. Today, every day, I want you to get up and read this stuff that I'm going to write you. And say it, if you need to, out loud, to convince yourself. Sometimes we have to say things out loud to convince ourselves, to make us feel better. All right? Look, I don't want to come out. I'm not upset with you. Gee, I sound like I'm a raging, don't I? I'm a raging at you, Ashton. No, I'm not. I don't want you to think that I'm PO'd at you. I really don't. I'm just saying that I know that it sounds like you've had a family who's been doing that all your life. And it's really easy, you know, once the family models the rage and the anger and they always fight and all that. That's how you learn. That's all you know. But as an adult now, you have to take responsibility for your actions and your thoughts. That's all you can control. And you got to say, I'm going to just, when my brother gets me crazy or my dad or whoever gets me crazy and I'm starting to argue with him, you have to learn how to say, you know what? I'm not going here today. I got to go. Bye. That's it. You got to draw boundaries and not let them get you crazy. Do not give them the power to get you crazy. I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm saying you as an adult need to start taking charge and stop making excuses. Sounds to me like you may be losing this lady if you don't really start to clean it up. Go to an anger management group. The ones nowadays are pretty good. They really, kind of helps you think about these thoughts. Repetitive thoughts, repetitive actions to stop this will sink in. And then you'll stop or slow down, which will make your girlfriend probably go, wow, he's really working to make this relationship work. Maybe you don't want this relationship to work, Ashton. Maybe you're secretly trying to get rid of her on a subconscious level. And this is the way you do it. Think about that. You really want this lady? Now, that's weird. That's a whole other show. But what I'm saying to you is think about it and try to work it out, some of the suggestions. All right? All right. Write me back. Let me know how it's going. I have another email I wanted to answer from Carrie. And this is she really sounds like a sweet lady. She says, Dear Dr. Michelle, I've always felt like I'm not pretty enough or smart enough. I'm a single 25-year-old college grad working at a small production company in Los Angeles as a production assistant. That's good. Although people tell me that I'm doing a great job and seem to like me, I'm always worried if they are telling me the truth. I don't have a boyfriend, but do go out with friends. When I'm at a club or someplace social parties, guys try to hit on me. I feel like they're being nice to me. Yeah. And I get quiet. I know that I'm not ugly, but that my friends are hotter. And they definitely have better personalities. My friends tell me that I am pretty and that I'm too paranoid, that I should loosen up and have more self-confidence. What can I do to feel better about myself? Thanks. Okay. Well, I think you should take your friend's advice. Okay, next. All right, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, definitely take your friend's advice. You know, you are being a little too paranoid about thinking that they're feeling sorry for you. What's up with that? Where did you get that from? I was happy to read here that you said, I know that I'm not ugly. I really am glad to hear that from you. But that my friends are hotter. Well, that's your stuff. You know, I mean, that's what you think. They may think you're hotter. So think about that a little bit. You should loosen up and you should have more self-confidence, like I said, with your friend. So what you have to do is you have to relax. You have to see, as we present on the outside, we got to think on the inside that we're okay with who we are, because what's happening is you're presenting on the outside. People do subconsciously read a lot of body language. They feel that you're really withdrawn and don't like who you are a lot of times when you're out in public places. And although guys may approach you because you are probably really a neat lady and approachable, you're already putting up the thought and probably the body language that you're not worth it, or they're just trying to appease you, be nice to you. That's weird, honey. Why would someone just be nice to you to come up? Why would some guy come up and try to hit on you just to be nice to you? Why would he waste his time? Really? I mean, some people do that just to hang out with a gang, or if you're with a group of girls, the cluster, as we call it. But I get that. But really, really, thinking someone's being nice to you because they feel sorry for you? Honey, I don't know where you came from, whatever kind of background or what messages you got, but I'm kind of guessing that you weren't worth it. And you got a lot of criticism from whoever that you weren't enough, pretty smart enough, and you bought into it. And here you are, 25, out into the world on your own, trying to live a life, and you're getting problems. You're getting problems here within yourself, low self-esteem. So, look, let me tell you this, Carrie. Everybody has low self-esteem. Everybody. And the narcissists that are out there and you know, coming off like they don't have issues or anything like that, they really do. The deep down, that's real insecurity. That's fear, deep fear. So, most folks are more aware of their weaknesses than their strengths. We all feel that way. And all of us are taught that we're going to fail. We also fear, most of us, we're going to fail. That's like a big word when we're growing up. So it's often hard to enjoy success. Even if you have a little success, sounds like you're cute. Sounds like you have a nice job. You graduated college. You have nice friends. So start off there. Okay. There's this guy that wrote a book, Dr. Brandon, and he says that... I love this quote from him. He says, like, positive self-esteem is the immune system of the spirit. It helps people face problems and bounce back from adversity. So good self-esteem is crucial during rough times. Especially, you know what I've noticed is a lot of teens who write me. I see some adolescents and young adults and stuff, and their self-esteem sucks. It's really crucial during the turbulence. When you're transitioning into, you know, really kind of knowing what's going on in the world. It's really difficult sometimes. But here, self-esteem is built on the experience of success. It's a circular process. When you experience success, you get self-confident. And as self-confidence grows, you feel more empowered to face new challenges. As you succeed in confronting each challenge, then you develop the capacity to cope with whatever life throws your way. It's like, you know, that whole circular thing again. You work hard, you get some kudos from the world out there, you get some nice friends, which you have. You got a nice job, sounds like to me, which you have. You do get people coming up, guys, which you really do. So you got to start thinking about what's going on. So what I'm getting to here, Carrie, is to keep and start really maintaining your self-esteem and get it up there. You need to celebrate your strengths and your achievements. You got to say, you know what? I am this. You know, please do write down all the stuff that you're doing that's good. Sounds to me like you're on your own and you're pretty successful. You got out of the house. You're doing your own thing. You have friends. You're able to get out. You have money. You know, maybe not a lot, but it sounds to me like you're earning dough and you can live a life. So celebrate those strengths and your achievements. Celebrate them. Go, yeah, I did this. I did that. Wait a minute. I did this. Because look at all the people that don't have what you have. Now, forgive yourself for the stuff you think you've done. You may not have done a lot of stuff. that's bad? Any mistakes, as you say? Bad guys you got involved with? Crappy jobs you got involved with? Failed classes, maybe? Whatever. Forgive yourself. That's done. It's in the past. That's how we all learn to live, is we make mistakes. We get through it. Next. You know, we feel bad for a while. We get down. We go, I'm such a jerk. You kick yourself all over the universe. But then you go, you know what? Okay. I'm going to cry and feel sorry for myself. And that's great. Pity's wonderful. Get over it. Pick yourself up again. Brush your shoulders off and get out there. Don't dwell on your weaknesses. Everybody has them. We all have them. You know, we all have weaknesses. Whatever they are, physically, whatever they are emotionally. Just get out. Don't dwell on it. Everybody has stuff. Nobody's perfect, whatever your idea of perfection is. Maybe you have this thing about perfection. So change the way you talk to yourself, Carrie. Stop putting yourself down. Change the way you talk to yourself. Stop that negative. You know, he probably is being nice to me because he wants to be with my girlfriends here in the club, and he's just being nice to me. Not. He wouldn't take the time. He wouldn't even bother with you. He probably just wants to get laid. Maybe. Maybe. But if you were really nasty, he wouldn't want to come up to you and get laid. All right? So change the way you talk to yourself. When you start to go to, oh, he probably doesn't. Stop. He doesn't like me. I'm not good enough. Stop. Stop putting yourself down. Don't go there. Replace it with another statement. I look pretty good tonight. I feel pretty good tonight. That's it. And be sure that you're not judging yourself against unreasonable standards. And I told you this perfection thing. I have way too many ladies who come in to see me who are perfect. Perfect. They want to be perfect. What is that? Nobody knows what perfection is. I had a caller on the line here. Let's see if I can pull him up. Hi, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. Who's this?
Hi, Dr. Michelle. My name's Ty.
Hi, Ty. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Where are you calling from?
Where am I calling from?
Yeah.
Arizona, actually.
Cool. It's nice to have you with me.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate you calling in. And what's going on with you today?
Well, I have a question for you.
Okay.
We have a family member mm-hmm. who we believe is bipolar.
Okay.
To some degree.
Okay.
And we've been told by other people mm-hmm. that this is probably what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And do you know much about that?
I do know much about that. I do.
You do.
I do.
We have a situation with her where she's always argumentative.
Yep.
Kind of out of control at times.
Okay.
And we don't exactly know how to broach the subject with her.
Okay.
And what we need to follow through to try and get her some kind of a treatment.
Yeah.
Or something.
Okay.
What are your words of wisdom?
Okay. Well, let me ask you some questions first of all. You kind of been feeling that it's a bipolar thing, because are her moods up and down a lot? She goes up and down a lot?
Constantly.
Okay. Like every day, or is it like mood changes within a day or whatever? Or
I would say, well, I'm not constantly around her every day.
Yeah.
A lot of other people are, but like the times that I'm around her or that my wife is around her, she'll be fine for quite a while, and then all of a sudden bring up a specific subject or something, and she kind of wigs out on it.
Okay.
And she gets into a conversation mode, like all with herself. You can't even cut her off.
Right, right.
And that's nice. What some of these other friends that we've talked to, they said, you know, that's some of the characteristics of mm-hmm. bipolarism.
That's true.
And it's always about her.
Ah, okay.
It's a constant thing like that.
Okay.
And it's just a source of a problem for the family and all the members, and we just don't know what to do.
Okay.
We don't know where to go.
Yeah, yeah. So let me just give you some of the things. It sounds like that's what's going on, because, you know, the bipolar or bipolar 1 or 2 or whatever, does she have, like, psychotic things? Does she talk about seeing things or hearing voices or anything like that?
No, okay. Not to my knowledge.
All right. That's more of a bipolar one thing, you know. But so the bipolar two is, you know, there's manic episodes like elevated, irritable moods, and like self-esteem or grandiosity. Does she brag about herself of being very like a lot of self-importance and?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Okay.
It's always about her.
Okay. All righty. She has weird sleep patterns, like will stay up really late and then sleep in late. Weird sleep patterns like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
A lot of the times, weird sleep patterns would be a portion of it. Sometimes you don't even know if she's home or not. She kind of closes herself off. Beautiful day outside, and the windows are all closed. Everything's dark inside. And that kind of leads you to believe that she's in some kind of depression.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I would feel about it.
Right. And that.
Constantly moving from job to job.
Oh, okay.
Not really holding anything down with any, you know, regularity at all.
Yep. Right. Yeah, no, that's, I can't really.
What do you do with this?
Well, I'll tell you what you do. I can't really diagnose over the phone, but this sounds kind of like what's going on. And she may have a little personality disorder as well in there. That's what happens sometimes when you have, like, the bipolar. You have those way off the, you know, off the handle, explosive anger, you know, and the constant talking and the narcissism and all that. Sometimes you have the personality disorders that go with it, which is totally unstable interpersonal relationships. You know, you idealize somebody, everybody, like a family members, they're wonderful and they're great and they're the best, and they badmouth other family members, and then they'll come around, and then like 3 months later, you'll be the enemy. You'll be the bad guy, and then they'll build up.
Yeah. I've been there.
Okay.
I'm always the bad guy.
Okay.
No matter what I do what I say or how I try and approach a situation with her, she'll talk to me one way, and then as soon as my back is turned, it's like I've done everything wrong in the world.
Right.
To her.
Yep. Well, it sounds like she needs really some... So she doesn't have a lot of people around her. She doesn't have a relationship, you know, that kind of thing. She just...
Whatever people she has around her, they don't come around as often anymore.
Sure.
And it's been going on for years.
Years. Like how many years? We're talking...
Oh, I would say a good 8 to 10 years.
Wow. And people have told her, of course, I'm sure you've told her and your family has and friends have said, you know, you're out there sometimes. Why you get so crazy? Why you get so angry? Why? And does she...
Well, we kind of look at it and we talk to her that we would like her to see somebody or go to a doctor and get some kind of a... solution or at least somewhat of an answer to what's going on with her. Mm-hmm. And she absolutely refuses. She says there's nothing wrong with her, and yet just the average person who might sit down and talk with her for a little while can obviously see that there's something out of balance.
Right.
Something up and down all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's so tough. No, it's tough to deal with. And if you've been going there for really a long time, the off and on and the off, you know, and you've been telling her and other people have been telling her she needs help and she absolutely refuses, which is common a lot of times, especially with a personality disorder, which is different from the bipolar. Well, you know, because they don't see what they're doing. They blame the world on their, you know, anger. They blame the world on their inability to keep a job, inability to hold relationships. It's always somebody else's fault. It's always somebody else's, you know, the bad guy. So when you're dealing with that kind of a mindset, and it's truly a lot of folks come to me and they don't understand, they go, what did I do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. Family members, friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, they didn't do anything wrong per se. They just were kind of there and got in that whole drama of this person's way out there. They can't understand that there is no reasoning. And no matter how much you can sit down and talk, and there are moments when they'll go, wow, yeah, sometimes I do that. You're right. But then, you know, the next day, they'll be back in their out there craziness.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, it's very rare that she will turn around and say that she's at fault for something or that she she may have said something, you know,
right.
that was hurtful to somebody.
Yeah.
Very rare that she would ever admit something like
right.
that. More times it's always, oh, I never said that. I never acted that way. I've never been like this.
Right.
And
right.
yet, if you've been around it for any period of time, it's consistent all
oh, yeah.
the way through.
Yep.
And, of course, when I mentioned going to talk to a doctor or going to, you know, for some kind of diagnosis or something, she just goes off the wall.
Right, right.
And, I mean, she can get pretty hysterical at times.
Right. So she
and we just don't know what to do. I mean, it's kind of split up the family and...
Aww.
You know, as to wanting to be around her or to be with her.
Right.
Because
right.
she's constantly, it's either all about her or she's constantly negative about everybody else's life.
Right, right.
And you just don't need to hear that from a day-to-day or a week-to-week basis from somebody.
No,
but yet, she's like, you know, she's with us and we'd like to be able to do something for her or with her, but we don't know how. We don't know where.
Exactly. And, you know, it's really hard, especially when you have sisters or brothers or, you know, family members, cousins or whatever who have this kind of problem and they don't even want to see it. They don't even want to take it in and they're not even willing to take a look. And that's really all you can do. And I don't mean to be negative or anything, but all you can do is keep saying, when they have the angry outbursts, when they start going off, you have to draw boundaries. And I've told some family members, you know, to deal with their, if they have a personality disorder, a lot of the borderline or narcissistic people, to draw the boundaries and say, you know what, if you're going to scream at me and yell at me, I have to go now. I'm not willing to take this. I'm hanging up. And they're still raging on the phone. Or they're in person raging
Absolutely.
At you. You have to say, you know, I'm going to count to 10. And if you're still screaming and yelling, I'm walking away, I'm gone, or I'm hanging up. So here we go. One, two.
Well, I've done that. I've done that a number of times,
yep.
and she'll end up calling back still screaming.
Right. Well, you don't see the number. Oh, my God, my heart goes out to you. So, okay, here's the deal. Oh, God, you're laughing. At least you're still laughing, you know.
As a family member, how do you... How do you try and fix somebody, or how do you try and get them help? Where do you go? What do you do?
You can't really try and fix someone who's absolutely refusing, except if, you know, you've seen those intervention programs on television. You heard of the interventions when somebody's an addict. This is almost like the same scenario. They can't help themselves, so they need people and family members to pick them up and say, you're going to therapy. Sometimes you need a family intervention. Have this person come over and say, you've hurt me in this way. This is what you do. We love you. We want, you know, you've seen the intervention. Everybody has written up a little script. And you have a professional interventionist, someone who can do that kind of thing, say, you know, lead the group, and it's, you know, they all perceive it as ganging up against them and the whole world's against them. But sometimes it works because, again, you're dealing with someone who has, like a substance abuser, they're...
Well, when you're saying having an intervention, do you also have a professional there at the same time?
Yeah, it's good to have a professional interventionist, you know, someone who has done substance abuse, you know, interventions, or someone who can do a family therapist, mediations. She's probably not going to show up if she knows there's going to be somebody there, because usually it's very scary. So it would be, we need to all sit down and talk to you about something. We're going to have a nice dinner together and we need to all sit down and talk about something. You get, you know, whatever family, whoever wants to join in and kindly, and the interventionist will share with you how to talk to this person. And you're coming from a loving place. You're not, you did this to me, you're a jerk, you did, you know, you're coming from, I love you so much. And this is
is the interventionist, as you put it, obviously a professional, but is this a psychiatrist or a psychologist or?
Can be one of any people. It can be an addictionologist who has certification, you know, in helping people with substance abuse. It can be an MFT, marriage family therapist, who, you know, has a license to help families. And it can be a psychologist. Psychiatrists don't, you know, they're more medication folks. So what would be the course of action is, a lot of times you'd all sit down with the group and tell this person how they have affected your lives and how they're hurting you and what you really want them to do. And say, you know, we are willing to And you've seen those shows again. Like they say, we are not going to put up with this anymore. We've reached out. We've tried to help you. We're not going to put up with this anymore unless you try to get help, unless you try to get some kind of medication to help, you know, manage that aggression, anger, depression you have. Sounds like she's isolated and blocking herself off. So, you know, unless she can do that. And then a lot of times the interventionist or MFT, whoever is working with the family too, you can have family groups, you know, on a regular basis, talk about feelings. You know, it's not like you're dumping on this person's, you know, it's more like a family
group. Yeah, but they view it as though you're dumping on
them. Well, of course
they
do, and they always will. That's how they perceive the world, dumping on them. But you're just hoping that slowly things will sink in, and that if they do agree to maybe see, you know, psychiatrist is a scary word for them, because then they think, oh, aha, they do know I'm crazy, you know. So, you know, internists, general practitioners will prescribe SSRIs, you know, like antidepressants or the new SNRIs, which are, you know, a new level of, they're not rather new, but they work on norepinephrine too. But anyway, so, you know, they will prescribe, you know, internists will prescribe medication. You don't want these people to get on a benzodiazepine, which is like a Valium, Ativan, Klonopin, or a Xanax to manage their anger, because they'll become addicted usually. A lot of those personalities who are out there, the rageaholics and stuff, they get more addicted to the benzos too. So that's kind of a downward spiral, and I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about all these drugs, exactly what do these drugs attack? Is this a chemical imbalance in somebody, or a mind imbalance?
Yeah, and I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't tell you, and I can't really say what, you know, what's right or whatever. But what I've seen is that I've seen people who there's two theories. There's chemical, you know, there's biological, and then there's environmental. Like, did this person learn how to behave like this from her family? From her upbringing? Did she learn how to blame everything on the world and have angry outbursts from mom or dad or whatever? That's number one theory, or whoever else displayed that, whoever else she was brought up by, and learn to, you know, seek attention by doing this behavior. That's environmental. Or number two, did she also inherit that stuff, the chemicals, from those people?
You're saying it could be
both.
Hereditary?
Could be both. Could be that she, you know, they have statistics about how you inherit certain, you know, depressions, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder.
To be honest with you, I can't remember anybody else in my family that's been this blacked out.
Yeah, up and down and all that. Yeah. And bipolar disorder, by the way, it's what they call the most heavily genetically loaded disorder. In other words, like if your adult parent has it, one of your parents, you're like 50% likely to get it. It's really nasty.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the heaviest, you know, other than other things like depression or schizophrenia or OCD, things like that. It's the heaviest that you know, family, children, or other family members are likely to get. So it's kind of creepy, but so it's not, you know, it may be, and this way too, sometimes it helps families to understand
that
person.
Does it pass over generations?
Yeah, it can. Sure, it can. You hear about, I have clients who say, you know, my mom and dad were pretty cool, but I heard my grandpa was really out there. I mean, he used to just go on these anger things, and he used to do that. And then he was really nice. And I remember growing up, he was really weird, and he used to scare me. So sometimes you hear these stories. See, they didn't have medications like back then, so we can't really judge. We can't really go, well, what
well,
was
you know, just in talking to you, I'm going to have to take a good look at my brother now.
Yeah? Really? You think? Has he got some of that stuff going on?
I'm starting to laugh about this.
Okay. Uh-oh.
I'm starting to wonder if he might be a little cockeyed, too.
Okay. All right.
But I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Now, let me tell you.
But it could be hereditary.
Well, you know, sometimes. Oh,
it's
kind
of passed around. That could be it.
Well, you know. You never know, but you're funny. But anyway, I really think that, you know, you have to keep hanging in there. Draw the boundaries with her. You're not willing to talk to her if she's going crazy on you and causing, you know, splitting in the family and problems like that. You can't, you know, all you can do is draw boundaries when she, it's like a child, when she's misbehaving, you're gone. I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to put up bye-bye, like you've been doing, it sounds like. You can keep urging her to get help. Please get help. Do you see how you're screaming out at me right now? This is what we're worried about. You need to get some medication that's going to relax you and make you feel better. We love you. We want you
to get
help.
Well, she's not only done it with us, but she's done it with next-door neighbors and people across the street. I mean, it's not on a consistent basis, but it seems as though she's... maybe something's just not going right for her, and somebody asks her the wrong question, she really goes off the deep end.
That's a,
Then they'll turn around and call us, or they'll call me and say, this is the action that that happened with your sister the other day, and we can't believe that she was talking to us like that. And it was kind of scary for them, and they kind of stay clear of her now.
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens. People just don't want to be around people like that. It's scary stuff.
And
it's like a catch-22. You know, they have to act out because that's what they do. And then people go away, and then they blame the people. And it's just a cyclical thing. You know, they don't ever get it resolved because people are always going away from them, and they never take responsibility. So you know, try to get a family intervention if you can. Try to keep emailing or talking or whenever she's available, saying, we love you. Whenever she goes crazy, say, see, this is the kind of behavior that we're freaking out about with you. You're driving us crazy. And, you know,
and then try and get some professional, or get her to a professional who can, I guess, really diagnose. Because I've heard is, you know, from what people are saying, what this bipolarism is. And she seems to fit that mode. And that's what was my basic question to you was. I think you're pretty much answering it.
Okay, good.
That might be the spot that she's in.
Yeah, well, I feel bad.
Well, thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome. I thank you for calling in. And, Ty, you have a wonderful day, and appreciate your calling.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's what I get a lot of in my practice is family members. I have, like, ladies who have been married to guys, and vice versa, who just couldn't deal with them anymore because it's not only the anger, it's the drama of, oh my God, everything is drama and it revolves around them. It's not, you know, it's the smallest things that most people would just shine on and go, oh well, that was a weird thing at work. Next. The guy I work with, the lady I work with, or the people in the line at the bank, or the whatever, you know, whatever. It's just not a biggie. You just go on with your life. People who have maybe a personality disorder, they call it the cluster B, the axis 2 cluster B, sometimes they just blow up the drama. Everything is about them, and it's blown up. The drama's huge. Every little moment is made into a huge about them moment. So it's a very tough thing, and it's very tough being with family members and or partners, lovers, whatever, who have it, because a lot of times they know not what they do. They know not what they do. They're more addicted to the chemicals of the rage and the drama and the feel sorry for me and the attention seeking and all that stuff. Wow, I got really heavy here. But anyway, I appreciate you calling in, Ty, and that's, hopefully help her. Sometimes with people who really need the help and they absolutely refuse, they don't want to hear that they have anything wrong with them, all you can do is try. But you know, the old thing, you can lead the horse to the water, and the horse is not going to drink. They're going to self-destruct. And that's negative, and that's not a good thing. But what else can I say? You know, I got another call. Let's see here. Hey, good morning. This is Dr. Michelle.
Hi, Dr. Michelle. My name is Sue.
Hey, Sue, how you doing? I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. I thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
It's great to hear you.
I have a question for you, and I'm not, I'm just not sure what to do in this.
Okay.
My daughter had gastric bypass surgery about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And since that time, I'm concerned that there's been some, that she obviously had emotional issues to needing the surgery.
Yeah.
That she couldn't lose weight on her own. But she went from very large to very thin in a pretty quick period of time.
Yeah.
And now it appears to me that she's having a lot of in medical issues, but most of them, when she has them checked, are not real.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if, this is, you know, mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out what kind of help to get for mm-hmm. her mm-hmm. To advise her. Do you find that there are some emotional issues that don't get addressed mm-hmm. Even after losing so much weight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. What happens sometimes is that if she, so you're saying that she may be like having a, they call it like a somatic disorder, where she may be kind of creating problems or thinking she's having physical problems, but they're really not there. And it's more
yes.
like a hypochondriac kind of a thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, she barely qualified for the surgery because her BMI was just barely over the what they consider the range to have this surgery.
Right.
However, the doctors went ahead against our family's better judgment, went ahead and approved her surgery because she has had sleep apnea.
Ah.
But even
okay.
then, we believe some of this is because she just always has to have something fixed.
Right. 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 Exactly. Well, that, you know, that can be a pattern. A lot of times people who have somatic disorders, you know, they're, even though they're convinced, even though the medical doctors say that everything's okay and you're doing well, and, you know, they're not really trusting that that's right. There's something in them that always fears. There's a fear there. And, you know, there's always something wrong. There's got to be something wrong.
Right.
I'm not feeling right. They're very sensitive to feelings and issues, stomach issues and, you know, pains and migraine, you know, so that she could be having like, some kind of somatic disorder. And that is, you know, associated sometimes with people who get surgeries. They keep kind of sometimes getting surgeries to fix things. Sometimes the system kind of takes advantage of people like that too. But, so, yes.
Well, I think that might be, in her case, you know, she's fairly young, and she's had MRIs.
Right.
She's had a shoulder surgery.
Right, right.
But lately, you know, her weight loss has gotten drastic. She's somewhere around 5'8", and she is about 109 pounds.
Wow.
And so, but believes that she's mm-hmm. perfectly fine because she goes to the doctor. And, you know, at this point, I'm wondering how we help her.
Yeah. So is her doctor saying she's okay at 109 pounds at 5'8"? They're not saying you're too
much. Well, just recently her doctor has said, I think the issue has been the same doctor she's gone to from the time she was young, she continues
right.
to go to. So she hasn't seen specialist, and most of the time it's a nurse practitioner, and
right,
most
right.
of them, you know, and not that they're that those are
sure,
you know
sure.
those are fine doctors or practitioners, but mm. she, I think her condition warrants mm. something
yeah.
More of a specialist.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, she just recently had a colonoscopy, and
oh,
she's
yeah.
fairly young,
right.
And so she's constantly there.
Looking.
I guess the doctor is checking for
right.
things,
right, right.
But she holds a full-time job;
right.
she goes
right.
to work, but she schedules appointments
right.
constantly,
right, right.
So I'm trying to, you know, I believe,
yeah.
and I'm no
yeah.
expert, that mm-hmm. there are some issues that need to be addressed more on a
yeah.
her emotional,
psychological,
mental
yeah,
state.
Yeah. It sure sounds like it. It sure sounds like it. And, you know, I'm going to have to get wrapping up here because TJ McCormick is getting ready to get on the air next. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take down your phone number, and I'm going to call you back. And also what I'll do is I will email you, and I'm going to pick up on this next week because, I mean, this is a big thing. There's a lot of people who have, you know, some somatic disorders going on, and it really does exist in their mind, but there's a fear. And there's also something about hanging on to for attention, you know, physiological problems. And being a hypochondriac is total fear of, you know, serious illness all the time. So we can talk about the causes of that. And let me keep you on the line. And what I'll do is I'll get your number, and then I'll call you back, and I'll email you. And then I'll, like I said, provide a little more information. Is that cool? I'm so sorry I had to do this because I wish we would have hooked up a little bit earlier here so I could really get into this. So. All right.
Well, thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Susan, hang on the line, and we'll be with you in just a bit, okay?
Thank you.
All right, you got it. All right. It's Dr. Michelle. And this is, of course, On the Couch. I really hope you've enjoyed today, and I hope that, you know, you've gotten some insight as to what's going on here, and I hope I can help you guys calling me out. Thank you so much for being on the couch. TJ McCormick is next, by the way, and he's up for you as usual with his wonderful show. Thank you so much for writing in. You can find me on my website, drmichelletherapy.com. Dr. Michelle Therapy, Dr. Michelle, two L's therapy. Thank you so much for listening. Have yourself a wonderful day, and take good care. Bye-bye.
Get my feet back on the ground. My friends all laugh.